We listen to our patients complain about the long wait times, something like 4 to 6 weeks to get into other clinics who offer the Holter monitoring service. And that's just to get the monitor on. So we thought, hey, here's an opportunity to really help patients in our community with meaningful health outcomes. After careful consideration, we took this service into our pharmacy and the results, well, they speak for themselves. Hi, I'm Grace Lee, proprietor at Capital Chemist O'Connor in the ACT, and you're listening to the Guild Dispensary Podcast.
Welcome to the Guild Dispensary, the pharmacy podcast where we dispense the latest news and updates from the Guild, and you get to hear from industry experts on business and pharmacy-related topics.
This week is Heart Week, and Heart Week provides an opportunity for health professionals and the Australian public to start a conversation about heart health and take positive steps to reduce their risk of heart disease. One health professional contributing to better heart health is Grace Lee from Capital Chemist O'Connor, who is providing a Holter monitoring service through her pharmacy. A Holter monitor is a small, wearable device that records the heart's rhythm and is used to detect or determine the risk of irregular heartbeats. And today, we'll hear from Grace about what providing the service is like from a pharmacy owner's perspective. What are the concerns? How much does it cost? And is it actually worth it?
First up, it's time for What You May Have Missed, where we catch up on the latest news from the Guild. In the fast-paced world of pharmacy, it's easy to overlook some key updates. So let's dive in and make sure you're up to speed.
RPMA renewal applications now open. RPMA renewal applications have opened and will close on 14 June 2024. Please be advised that late renewal applications will not be accepted. Once submitted, the renewal application will have its status set to pending until the RPMA payment matrix for 2024/25 is made available and your allowance amount can be calculated. More information on the RPMA program can be found by following the link in the recent Guild Alert. ACCHO and IHS registration period for IHSPS program closes 17 May 2024. The 2024/25 IHSPS cycle will begin 1 July 2024 and run until 30 June 2025. ACCHO/IHSs will be notified of their annual budget on 1 July 2024 and begin working on their work plans for 2024/25 with submission of work plans due 30 August 2024. Pharmacies working with their local ACCHO/IHS to provide QUM services under the IHSPS program are encouraged to reach out to the ACCHO/IHS during this registration period and work plan development phase. More information on the IHSPS program can be found by following the link in your recent Guild Alert. Extension of transition period for medication management review credentialed pharmacists. The Department of Health and Aged Care has advised that all provider numbers, MRNs, due to expire on 30 June 2024 have been extended to 30 June 2024, ensuring MMR services can continue to be claimed and recipients are not impacted. The extension provides medication management review credentialed pharmacists with additional transition time to meet the Australian Pharmacy Council standards via undertaking an APC-accredited MMR recognition of prior learning process or training program. Hi, Grace. Great to have you joining us. As I mentioned in the intro, your pharmacy provides a Holter monitoring service. Tell us, how long have you been providing Holter monitoring and why did you initially decide to implement the service? What happened or what was occurring in the pharmacy that made you think, okay, maybe we should look at offering this?
Oh, thanks, Daniel. It's a pleasure to be here today. And yes, my pharmacy has been providing the Holter monitor service since like August 2022. So it's almost 2 years. And gosh, it's gone fast. So when deciding any service, it really depends on the needs and what the community is asking for. In this case, we listen to our patients complain about the long wait times, something like 4 to 6 weeks to get into other clinics who offer the Holter monitoring service. And that's just to get the monitor on. So we thought, hey, here's an opportunity to really help patients in our community with meaningful health outcomes. After careful consideration, we took this service into our pharmacy and the results, well, they speak for themselves. By reducing the wait time to within 24 to 48 hours and having the results available within a week, This has had a significant impact for our patients.
And do you find that when people come and talk to you about it, they're really stressed about this process and how long it might take? And so there's a real opportunity to connect with them and say, don't worry about it, we got you.
Yeah, correct, correct. So overall, the process from setup to getting them out of the door usually is about 5 to 10 minutes. So it's really great. So they're like, if they're rushing to get to work in the morning, we can get it onto them pretty quickly, and then they're off, and then they'll come back the next day to get it all taken off. And that also is like a 5-minute job, essentially.
Now, before you implement a service like this, you obviously want to know what you're getting into, especially things like, do people in the community actually need it? Is there enough of them? Is it going to be profitable for the business? And looking at things like what you need to change inside the pharmacy in terms of education and process, maybe even equipment, things like that. What was the process you went through from initially researching it as an option through to getting it implemented?
Definitely agree. Understanding what it is, who needs it, and balancing the business risk and actions is always front of mind when it comes to implementation of a new health service. We understood what it was and the need from our community. Naturally, what came next is doing the business research and finding out what changes need to be made. When I looked it up earlier in 2022, there were 4 other pharmacies in our Capital Chemist group who were also trialling the service. And the speed of transition to offer the service was quite appealing. From there, I reached out to John, director of Anderson Murray Diagnostics, and was guided through the journey that our patients would take. It was insightful. And from there, I was confident this would be the right service to offer our community. In addition, John was also thorough with the business financial side, specifically the investment needed and returns. This gave everything I needed from an owner's perspective. From here, I ran it past my team at O'Connor, who shared similar thoughts. We signed on. We took the delivery of the device and consumables, went through the training, rearranged our consult room just slightly, so our patients and team have the space and privacy they need for the service.
Was there much training involved? Was it maybe 1 or 2 hours, or was it multiple sessions, or was it onerous?
No, it was actually quite straightforward, and it was just done remotely online, and it was very quick to get up and running.
Very good. So we've obviously got you on to have a chat about this because you've enjoyed success. As you said, it was around about 1.5 to 2 years ago that you implemented the service. Did you have any reservations or concerns before you implemented? Was there anything on your mind that worried you?
Oh, absolutely. Like, you're spending a couple of thousands of dollars, like, without seeing the results personally, I think anyone would get just a little bit anxious about that, right? Yeah. Seriously, on the note of return on investment was a factor. However, we realized that this would make a real difference as we were committed to improving the health outcomes for our patients.
So you spoke there about spending a couple of thousand dollars. I did want to talk about the financial impact. What insights can you share into the cost to implement Holter monitoring and how long it's taken to recoup it?
So my concerns was to ensure that we could offer the service as we understood the benefits for our patients, but also balance this with the return on investment figures so that we can continue to offer this service. Numbers wise, for us, a 5-year agreement with Anderson Murray Diagnostics made sense. This meant our costs were mainly operational expenses, and this is important for cash flow, especially when managing a combination of health services and medicines. Included in this is the yearly service fee, device hire, and consumables such as the electrode pads and batteries. In the agreement, we receive a portion back for every service we complete, which needs to balance against our costs such as wages, promotions, and other expenses. In addition, if patients don't have Medicare, we receive a portion of the monitoring service that is charged. The majority of this covers the fees for cardiac technicians, cardiologists, and equipment hire, and the rest is contributing to our return on investment and expenses. So the return on investment on a 5-year agreement, when I did the number crunching, would need to at least average a 17 monitoring services done per year to break even.
So you initially thought to offer Holter monitoring because it was in response to those patients in the community complaining about facing long waits. You just spoke about return on investment there, but more widely, did you find, or are you finding over time, that the service is bringing new patients into the pharmacy that you may not have otherwise interacted with or serviced?
Yeah, we're very excited to offer this new service as it addressed the need for the community. At the same time, we knew that we needed to adjust our expectations. So in the last 2 years, it has definitely contributed to our patient numbers increasing.
As you said, you're really excited to be able to offer this new service. We know that you've got limited resources in the number of pharmacists that you can have in a pharmacy as a small business like yourself. Is it something that non-pharmacists can help with, play a part in, support, or even just do themselves in place of a pharmacist?
So we found that this service 100% could be run by non-pharmacists. This gave a lot of opportunities for our pharmacy assistants and especially pharmacy students to upskill. What we did when we implemented this service was the first few sessions with consent, our team would work with the patients and we implemented a shadowing approach, which immensely helped with knowledge transfer within our team. Additionally, we created our own step-by-step procedure and did quick catch-ups to see what areas we needed to improve. And these procedures are available, and it's because it's so easy to follow through, it could be a reminder for someone who isn't doing it very regularly that they can do it.
So the pharmacists were ready, the pharmacy assistants were ready, the team and the pharmacy as a business are ready. As you said, you're really excited to be able to offer this to patients in the community. How did you and still do promote the service to the community? Because one day you weren't offering it and then the next day you were. How did you get the word out there?
There's that saying, if we build it, they will come. Our key advantage is listening to our community, which has shaped the way we outreach. Doing the standard posters and running awareness campaigns and updating our website offerings with intelligent Google SEO sets the stage so our patients can find us easily. What sets us apart is the strong belief by improving the lives of our patients will lead to genuine word of mouth sharing. This, combined with strong relationships with our local GPs and current patients, contributes to our outreach.
So you have it in place, you've built it, they've come. Let's say a patient comes in and needs a Holter monitor. We alluded to it a little bit earlier. What's the process like for them, and what's the process like for you? Talk us through the steps. What happens when they come into this pharmacy?
So for our patients, they would be greeted by a member of our team and guided to the consult room for the one-on-one consult with our trained staff. Most of our patients call in advance with the inquiries, and it really helps set the expectation and journey they will go through. So for example, we'll inform them to shower beforehand because the Holter monitor device is not waterproof. From a business perspective, the process involves essentially three steps, each requiring set procedures that we adhere to have the best quality service we can provide. These are: one, capture an agreement; two, connect and educate; three, reporting and referral. In capture an agreement, our procedural goals are to collect the referral form, complete and double-check the baseline information required as inputted, inform our patients about the details of the service, and have them sign the hire agreement form. Secondly, for connect and educate, cleaning the area for the electrode pads. We may need to clear away the area if there's excessive hair. Ensure the device is connected and recording, educate the patient on usage and what to do when experiencing any symptoms. And lastly, reporting a referral, remove and collect the device, reporting the collected data to Anderson Murray Diagnostics, provide clear and concise updates to our patients, following up with patients about the results and managing reminders so that they follow up with their doctors. So this comprehensive set of goals for each day contributes directly to the quality of our Holter monitor service.
Very comprehensive, but Grace, there's always going to be times where no matter how much training you do, how much planning, how many steps you have in place, you're eventually going to encounter something that wasn't explicitly taught or planned for. What are some of the things you and your staff have learned during the process that might not have been covered in the training, or you might not have even thought was going to be an issue when you first started down this path?
The biggest lesson during the process with our patients when compared to training is communication is crucial. I think that's probably anywhere, everywhere. So why? Well, as you imagine, when all of our devices are out, managing bookings and referrals with our patients and keeping all my staff well informed was an unexpected scenario not covered in training. And because of this, we created additional communication channels within the business to ensure that everyone knew who, what, and where the devices were. This translated to maximum usage and efficiency within our pharmacy. Additionally, we learned that there was a minimum age to the Holter monitoring, which is 5 years and older. As a younger person, we'll need to be referred to a pediatric cardiologist. And lastly, cost to the patients for a 48-hour monitoring. Medicare will only cover the first 24-hour monitoring period every 4 weeks. If the patient requires more, the first day will be bulk billed and our patient will be required to cover the rest.
So, Grace, at this point, you've had quite a few patients getting the Holter monitor service through your pharmacy. How has the service been received by patients, and can you share a little bit of feedback that you've received?
Our patients' feedback has been quite positive. I've heard comments like it's light, it doesn't disturb my sleep, it's convenient and easy to just pop in my pocket, or I never knew I was at risk. These word-of-mouth experiences that our patients have and they're sharing with loved ones or friends has increased our exposure to our community. And for us, it's rewarding, like knowing that we contributed to their health outcome.
So a really interesting and insightful chat here, Grace. As we start to round this up, do you have any advice for other pharmacy owners who are considering Holter monitoring as a service that they might introduce into their pharmacy?
Well, you're always welcome to call me. As a pharmacy owner, I know it can be daunting, but we're in it together for our patients and community. Also, I would highly recommend reaching out or sending letters to your local GPs to let them know about the service and how they can refer patients to you, because our first few were from our local GP right next door.
Great chat. Grace Lee, proprietor at Capital Chemist O'Connor in the ACT. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your journey and experiences in implementing and providing Holter monitoring services.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Next up, it's Policy Corner, where we dive into the policy world of the Guild's latest submissions. Whether it's an update on an existing proposal or a brand new initiative, these submissions have the potential to shape the landscape of pharmacy.
Joining us now for Policy Corner is Scott Harris, Director of Workplace Relations and Business at the Pharmacy Guild of Australia, to expand on our previous four discussions looking at the changes to the industrial relations legislation. Scott, welcome back. As we've mentioned in previous chats, there's been four changes to the Fair Work Act 2009 since 2022. Today, we're going to discuss the changes introduced through the Fair Work Legislation Amendment Closing Loopholes, which sounds like the last one we chatted about, but I understand that this is the number two act 2023. Firstly, tell us what the difference is and then why the federal government believed that changes were necessary.
Thanks, Daniel. Nice to be back talking to you again about some of these significant changes that are coming down the path, and it's going to really affect the workplace from there. Now, yes, it does sound like we're just repeating ourselves and just going around and closing a loop. But what happened was the original omnibus bill the federal government put up back in September 2023 was just too big and it had too many controversial parts in it. So as normal, when you let politicians play with something, they try to make it more complicated. So what happened is they separated the bill back then and made it into two parts. They took up, as we discussed in the last one in December 2023, they took up the small one and got through the items that they believed were non-controversial. But as we discussed in the last one, there's a couple of major ones that were really going to affect employers, and we don't know what that really means until we see the final drafting of the award changes. But that left were some of the things that were really controversial from an employer's point of view and what we're arguing about. Now, all the things out of the controversial ones, there's only a couple that really directly impacted community pharmacy. There was a lot of them that affected business overall, but for community pharmacy, it was very limited. So this session, I just would like to just cover off the two things that I see that's going to probably affect community pharmacy and employment relationships now and into the future between the employer and employees. So if we talk about the first one, is they finally got around to talking about what is determining the employment status, so whether you're a full-time, part-time or casual. In lines with that, they actually changed the definition of a casual and how a casual employee could be converted or transferred to a part-time or a full-time arrangement, depending on if they're working regular and systematic hours. So I'll say to the members, I'll say to everybody who's listening in that, what's going on? One part of it is they've said it's really talking about is you sign up on an employment contract and they're a casual because there's no, I'll use the correct terminology, they've used an absence of firm commitment or a firm advance commitment to ongoing and indefinite work. If that's the case, then it's a casual. But after that, then you've got to think about what they've used and they've underlined and they've made it very clear is what is the real, substantial, practical reality and the true nature of the employment relationship. A lot of real words to say, are you working regularly and systematically? And that was what the case was to go from day one. That's us plain people speaking, but there is a real technical part to this one. And from an employer's point of view, with the employee, you've really got to think about what is our relationship? Is it a true casual relationship with no firm advance commitment to continuing or indefinite work? And if it is that, then shouldn't this be something else? But if it's not, casual employment could be the best way to go forward. Now, the changes to this one to get to permanency now comes down to is it's not the employer's role to go up and talk to the person. It's the employee's got an obligation here to bring forward to their employer that they believe their employment relationship has changed and would like it to be reviewed. Let's see how that plays out. It's going to be ongoing. We advise employers to really think about what they want, whether they want a casual employee or do they want a part-time, full-time employee. But make it very clear from day one what the relationship is and put it into place. So they're the first two major ones. And then come this one that really gets to us that nobody's seen or nobody thought about. And I can say to our listeners on this part, there's been a lot of media storm over it, and it's this thing called a right to disconnect. Now, I'm thinking about the part is, what is a right to disconnect? I'll be very honest. Unless you as an employee are really thinking about that I should answer this outside of my normal working hours, unless it's an emergency or it's an expectation based on your position, your role, and who you work for, your decision if you want to put that phone up or not or answer that email. I'll say personally, I do it for my staff that I have. I make it very clear to them is that there is no requirement for them to answer emails or read emails or those text messages outside of their normal business hours. If I want them, and I've told them very clearly, I will ring them. And then they can make a decision from there if their family life permits them to answer the phone call. So it's been difficult, this one here, because there's been so much media hype over it. But it really comes down to what is the position, what is the expectations, comes even remuneration too on what they're paid and that, and is there really an emergency to be contacting those people outside of normal business hours? I would say yes to a casual, because you're trying to learn a casual or part-timer to say, or a full-timer, somebody's sick, can you come into work? That's not unreasonable request. But if you're ringing them up to say, hey, I just entered this, I'm looking for this on the computer, where is it? That would be an unreasonable approach to what's going on. I'd say for the listeners too is a pharmacist might have that expectation if you're being rang about a dispensing, an action that you've done through dispensing that day to do with medicine or primary health care. There might be a phone call coming through, and it would not be unreasonable to answer that phone call to provide guidance, especially from a primary health care reason.
So does that cover all the changes, or is there even more?
Oh, there's more changes. There's another 7 different changes on top of that, but those are the 3 that I think, just based on what we got, is going to directly impact on community pharmacy. Like, there's a part to the new rights for what's called the gig economy, where they're calling them the digital platform workers and road transport contractors, regulated workers. We don't see many of them, but they're a very specialised area. The one that may impact is people's increased the civil penalties. We talked about that last time where they've all been increased, but this is really, the big one here is a compliance notices, which is a notice given to an employer when they're engaging with a Fair Work Ombudsman's inspector who's turned up to the workplace because there's been a complaint or they're doing an inspection through there. If an FWO inspector turns up to the workplace, an employer is obliged to engage with them and talk with them, those ones. There's increases to what is contractor arrangements. There's one that very limited in community pharmacy is intractable bargaining workplace determinations, is where the dispute about enterprise agreement making. And there's one to do with right of entries, which is very limited in community pharmacy. So there, a lot of them are very technical things, but don't apply to our predominantly the community pharmacy workplace.
So the ones that do apply, those things that you've spoken about, have they come into place yet? Are some are in place, or are they still coming down the pipeline?
The right to disconnect will be in the Pharmacy Industry Award by August. I'm in the process myself working with the Fair Work Commission on what are the terms and conditions written in that. The casual employment is going to be the middle of this year, the definitions in that one. The determining employment status has an immediate effect. That's a technical change, not an ongoing change from there. All the rest range from now through to January 2025.
Very good. So got a little bit of time to start getting your ducks in a row, so to speak. So, Scott, for those that are listening to this and they're thinking that they should find out more information, the members, what can they do to go and find out more information about the changes and their obligations, importantly? What can they do? Where can they go?
As a member, that's what the Workplace Relations Advisory Team around Australian branches and territories, state and territory branches, and the advisors on the line are there to help members work through if they've got questions or issues to go with it. At the same time, there's a couple of webinars that we've put together that are online, on the members-only website area for the access, and the information's been uploaded there. But if they don't meet what they need or they've got particular questions, give a call and we can work through with them from there. So they know the members' numbers. But the other one is drop us a line and talk to us. Do not be afraid to come forward. We get more concern if you don't ask. It's easier to come forward.
Very good. Well, Scott, as always, helpful and informative. So thank you so much for joining us and sharing your views on the changes around the Fair Work Legislation Amendment, Closing Loopholes, No. 2 Act 2023.
Thank you, Daniel, for that, and all the best for yourself and the listeners.
Thanks again to Grace for providing her insights into everything that goes into providing Holter monitoring as a pharmacy service. If you have been thinking of implementing it yourself, I hope that Grace has managed to answer any questions that you may have. And of course, she did say that she'd be happy to take a phone call if you wanted to chat about Holter monitoring services. Until next time, I've been your host, Daniel Oyston, and you've been listening to episode 5 of The Guild Dispensary.